welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor Hollis French and Bob Williams. French is best known as a state senator from Anchorage. He is the Senate Minority Leader. Williams is a lifelong educator from the MATSU, with experience in the oil industry and in the Peace Corps. French and Williams discussed their visions for Alaska in a debate hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and recorded July 14th at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center. Other candidates for lieutenant governor include Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan, running as Republican, and independent candidate Craig Fleener. Anchorage Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow moderated this debate. You're listening to Addressing Alaskans. Here's Halcrow.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce's Make It Monday Forum. I'm Andrew Halcrow. I am the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. We want to welcome you here today. Today kicks off really what is a five-week debate series leading up to the August 19th primary. We appreciate you being here. This week we'll hear from the Democratic Lieutenant Governors. Next week we will hear about the initiative to legalize and tax marijuana. On the 28th of July, we will hear the debate over ballot measure one, oil tax reform. On the 11th of August, we will have the U.S. Senate primary debate. I will be your moderator today. Our normal debate moderator is in China, and I just simply could not get him to come back for a chicken lunch, so you are stuck with me today. The format will be this. The candidates will each have a four-minute opening. Then we will read them a list of questions that were compiled and created by the Anchorage Chamber's Legislative Committee. So now what we will do is we will begin with a four-minute opening from each candidate. Then we will get into the questions asked by our Legislative Committee. And as your moderator, I will, as a staffer for the Legislative Committee, if I feel the candidates are tap dancing at all, the moderator reserves the right to push back and ask a follow-up question. So with that, we'll get started.
Hollis French goes first.
Okay, thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate you all coming out on a sunny Monday to hear Bob and I tell you about what we think we ought to be doing best here in the state. Let me give you a brief biographical background, and then I'll tell you what I think the most important issues are. I moved to Alaska in 1978. I went to work in the oil industry. I worked there for 12 years as a blue-collar worker, leaving as a lead production operator at Kuparuk during the time when it was producing about 300,000 barrels of oil a day in just that field. I took my oil field earnings and went off to law school. When I returned to Alaska, I joined the Anchorage District Attorney's Office and spent the next 6 years there.
Prosecuting crime. Started doing DWI cases, then on to domestic violence, and finally rape, robbery, and homicide cases. I was elected to the Senate in 2002. I've been there for 12 years. Six of those years, I was in a true bipartisan coalition, Republicans and Democrats, meeting in the middle, working from the middle, and getting things done. This last year, I was the Democratic leader in the Senate. I'm married. My wife and I have one son. She's a real estate agent. We've owned and operated a property rental business here in Anchorage for just about 25 years, and we decided we were compatible partners after climbing Mount McKinley together while we were still dating. So enough about me, though. Why am I running for lieutenant governor? I really enjoy public service, and I see this administration leading Alaska in the wrong direction. I believe that the set of skills that I bring to this race complements Byron Malott's skill set very well, and that the two of us can and will make a compelling case to replace this governor with an administration that is more competent, more moderate, and better for the economy. Indeed, with respect to the economy, one simple step of expanding Medicaid would bring 4,000 new jobs to Alaska that are paid for 100% for the first 3 years by the federal government. We have a labor force in Alaska of 367,000 people. We have an unemployment rate of 6.4%. You bring 4,000 new jobs here, the unemployment rate drops 1 full percent, giving you an easy and significant jolt, positive jolt, to the Alaskan economy. I'm sure you all know that both the state chamber and this chamber support Medicaid expansion. More broadly, I believe that the way that state government can best pave the way to a prosperous future for Alaska is to focus on energy, infrastructure, and education. Let me talk about energy first. My vision for energy policy is to increase investment in renewables, including the Susitna Dam. The last time we were here as Lieutenant Governor candidates, we were asked to rank some big projects, and for me, Susitna comes in first for potential. Obviously, the project has to be right-sized, it has to pencil out, but hydro is a proven technology, and the project could provide 50 to 100 years of low-cost power from Fairbanks to Homer. As far as the gas pipeline goes, I want a gas line as badly as anybody else here in this room does, and I include Bill Walker, who really wants a gas line. But I will not yield one inch of desire for a gas line to anybody. Someday there will be a gas pipeline carrying gas off the North Slope. The resource is huge, our political system is stable, and the engineering and logistics, while large in scale, are fairly straightforward. Are you sure? Last time, really? 3:30? Okay. I slow down, I guess. The difficulty is in the economics. We are competing around the world with gas projects that draw from reservoirs located essentially at tidewater. The addition of 600 miles of 48-inch pipe puts us at the upper range of costs and, according to the state's own consultants, slightly out of the money. Let me finish with infrastructure. I was just in Southeast for a 10-day tour of Southeast. Their roads, like our roads, need improvement. Their roads, like our roads, need to be built anew. And finally, Ketchikan, just like Anchorage, both still desire a big new bridge. Thank you.
Mr. Williams, 4 minutes for an opening statement.
Hi, my name is Bob Williams, and I am absolutely delighted to be here as a candidate for Lieutenant Governor. Would like to draw attention to my wife, Connie, who is in the front, if she could please stand. I felt like I won the lottery. I won my primary when she said she'd be marrying me, and I won the general when we got married. So very glad that she could be here today. You see a picture there of my parents from the early 60s. My dad came to Alaska in 49, had a one-man sawmill and a homestead out in Mat-Su. My mom was a nurse on L Street and later at the Valley. The gun she is holding, the second time she shot it, killed a bear that was getting into our chickens. And basically, there's no better way to grow up with a strong work ethic than to be the son of a logger. And that work ethic I learned, I have taken with me. I took it to the offshore oil platforms in Nikiski as a roustabout. I took it to UAF to get a degree in petroleum engineering. I took it to Africa as a Peace Corps volunteer. I took it back to Alaska as I became a teacher. And I took it to the villages of Savunga, Gamble, and Nome as a statewide mentor. And I took it to advance my practice. I didn't coast. I didn't just sit back. I worked to become a very, very strong teacher and eventually the Alaska 2009 Teacher of the Year. If you look at the picture there, I'm also an amateur magician and also working on a PhD in public policy, so I can really see political sleight of hand and attempts at illusions. And I am focused on policies that are best for all Alaskans, not just some Alaskans. The other thing I really want you to know is I absolutely love running for Lieutenant Governor. One of the pivotal moments of my campaign, I was in Bethel, and John Angayak, my Yupik translator, he said, you know, one of the things we like about you, you're not rich. You're a teacher. Your dad was a working man. And you're one of us. You're like us. And I had an old logging jacket that was tattered, and it had a safety pin and a hole in it. And I said, I really can't wear this on a campaign. And he said, wear it. And I have to tell you, once I started wearing it, when I went ice hole to ice hole campaigning on the Kuskokwim, where the Johnson River hits the Kuskokwim, wherever I went with that logging jacket, I just have to say I felt very, very comfortable, and I felt at home that I was doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons. I wore it to rallies for public education. I had a young man named Leaf run up to me and point out that he also had a checkered logging jacket. I took it, met it when I met Rita from the Paskiak that was fishing for pike for subsistence, and she noted that she had just recently registered to vote because she really had some concerns about where our state was going. I took it also to Fairbanks, where I met many people that were concerned about whether our current state government listens, whether our current state government leads with and learns from what people say. I am all in. When I ran the color run, you can look at that picture. I am all colored in, and I was absolutely delighted to have people that were part of the Hmong community run with me. At UAF Fairbanks, I talk to students who care about our state and want to have a great university system in Alaska that represents and welcomes all Alaskans. Been in parades at Colony Day parades, Wasilla parades across the state, in the Midnight Sun Run. It is great going around. I've gone to the village of Tanana, door knocking. I've gone to Teller, a Napaskiak. Met Gust in Alaknatigiak. And learned his passion for the Yupik language. And Dillingham, where if you go to Dillingham and you are Four Pebble, you don't have a place to sleep. On the Copper Center, met many people that care deeply about our resources. Also in our biggest village of all, Anchorage, listening and learning to people and what we need to do. Very delighted, I have awesome supporters, veterans for Bob Williams, nurses for Bob Williams, small business owners for Bob Williams. It is awesome to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, candidates. Now we'll begin the questioning with questions that have been composed by our legislative committee at the Anchorage Chamber. Mr. Williams, we'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
The Lieutenant Governor's position is commonly referred to as simply watching over the state seal or waiting for the governor to die. What do you plan on doing differently to energize and engage the position?
For one thing, if you look at the last couple of lieutenant governors, we've had a very low bar of lieutenant governors campaigning for other positions, and you kind of wonder what's going on. But I sat down with Fran Ulmer, and she revitalized the Division of Elections and brought in optical scanners. She also told me, along with Lieutenant Governor Garcia of Colorado, at how they really could partner and increase the effectiveness of the executive branch. And that's what I plan to do with Byron Mallott. I'm not just wanting to sit in a position, I want to see things get done. I've done that as a teacher, I've done it as a logger, and I want to do it as lieutenant governor. So I'm going to get in there, and I'm very interested in voting by mail. We have horrific, absolutely horrific voting records, voting participation in Alaska. And I did big math assemblies, school-wide math assemblies that brought in excitement for mathematics. I plan to do the same thing for voting. I'm also very passionate about lowering our suicide rate. The most difficult thing I've experienced as a teacher is the loss of former students to suicide. And so I'm going to partner with the governor and build coalitions to lower our suicide rate, increase voter participation, and make sure that every single Alaskan, whoever you are, whether it's Shimya or Seward or Sutton, wherever you're at, you feel welcomed, you feel respected, and you feel valued. And I'm going to listen, I'm going to learn, and I'm going to lead.
Senator French, same question, 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess I'll just continue to amplify on that by saying, do not underestimate the power and the importance of running the Division of Elections. I'm surprised that that wasn't part of the question, because it is part of your statutory duties is to oversee the Division of Elections. Making sure that every ballot is counted accurately, making sure that you have a paper trail to follow up on that, making sure that every single person who wants to vote can vote, making sure that ballots are translated, if necessary, into the right language so Alaskan human beings, are not disenfranchised by the Division of Elections. Extremely important. And you need somebody an intelligent blogger who once said that no matter if you agree or disagree with Hollis French on his public policy positions, one thing is crystal clear about French, he has a passionate respect for the rule of law. Thank you, Andrew, for that. I really appreciate you saying that on your blog. But I also have a wide background in crime matters, in education, and I think I make a nice compliment to the governor. He's a Southeast person. I'm a Rail Belt person, and I think the two of us, you know, sort of bring a broad array of strengths and skills and backgrounds that will make us a highly effective team. Because that's what you look for in a lieutenant governor: someone who can fill in for you if necessary, who can take the reins if necessary. I've served 12 years in the state senate. I've worked on energy issues, worked on economic issues, worked on crime issues, worked on resource development, and that's something that I really enjoyed doing and look forward to doing more of. Thank you.
Thanks. Senator French, we'll stay with you, and this is a similar question.
These are two-minute responses?
2-minute responses, yes. There has been a history of lieutenant governors who have become more active than the governor has particularly appreciated over the last 10 years. There's been a couple of instances where governors have tried to rein in their lieutenant governors. And with your engagement as lieutenant governor, how do you view your role? Do you view your role as more independent, or do you view your role as somebody taking their cues from the governor?
I think the decision for us was made basically at statehood. In some states, you run independently, and you can get mixed results. In Virginia, for example, you can get a Democrat governor and a Republican lieutenant governor. Our forefathers, foremothers, looked at that situation and said, no, that's bad. We're going to have a highly powerful executive, but a unified executive. So you're not a co-governor. That's not realistic. There's one person in charge, that's the governor. That's the person who signs the bills, who prepares the budgets, who vetoes bills, and so forth. So the idea that you're going to be a co-governor, I think, is illusionary. On the other hand, you are a powerful force. Besides on the Division of Elections, you have, you know, this is, I just did spend 10 days in Southeast. I was 4 days in Juneau, then Sitka, Petersburg, took the overnight ferry to Ketchikan, 2 days in Ketchikan, flew back to Juneau, and wanted to run up to Haines and back for 4 hours and got stuck there for 36. So I've had a good recent reminder of how big a state it is. It's hard to cover the ground. If there's something important happening in Juneau and something important happening in Nome, the governor gets to decide which town he'd prefer to be in, and you get to go to the other one. Fair enough. I like traveling. But the idea that you're going to somehow be a co-governor is unrealistic. And so I'll just say that I've known Byram Lott for 10 years. I have a huge amount of respect for him. He has incredible intelligence. He has incredible, what I call, sort of natural moral authority. And when he speaks, people really listen. I'm more of a fast-talking person, a trial attorney person. Byron has a much more cadenced and interesting way of speaking. I look forward to being his lieutenant governor. I look forward to bringing my legal background to his background running the permanent fund. I think the two of us are going to make a very powerful pair for positive changes in the state. Thank you.
Mr. Williams, 2 minutes.
You know, we've had situations where the governor and lieutenant governor didn't get along, and it was acrimonious. And I always say, you don't aim for the lower quartile in the most dysfunctional situations. You aim for the higher quartile. You aim for the maximum, and that's what I plan to do. It's very clear to me that my role is to enhance and increase the effectiveness of the Mallott administration, and that's what I plan to do. My wife and I have hosted Byron and Bruce Patel in our home and talked about Byron's vision. And what I love about Byron is he is excellent as a corporate leader. He's ran Sea Alaska. He's ran the Permanent Dividend Fund. He has also led the Alaska Federation of Natives. But I know when I worked in Savoonga, he could sit down at the Savoonga Native store with the elders having a cup of coffee and be just as effective. And I plan to increase that effectiveness by traveling the state. And I'm going to work very hard to do that. I'm also a teacher. And a lot of times, part of the role is making sure that listening to Alaskans and communicating. And I do that very well. I'm filling out a questionnaire from the nurses PAC committee. And one of the things was talking about mental health first aid. And it was like, what would you do about funding? I'm not just sitting around waiting for funding. I looked at it. You can become an instructor for $2,000. I will self-fund for $2,000. I'll become an instructor. And with Byron's blessings, if he gives it to me, when I travel around and can fit it around, I will do the first aid mental health courses and make sure that it's culturally sensitive and work with all Alaskans. You have to build coalitions. It can't be just about the lieutenant governor. You have to build coalitions of support where everyone feels like, yes, this is what we're trying to do, and this is a good thing. And as lieutenant governor, I've done it as teacher of the year. I've done it as a logger. I'm now going to do it as lieutenant governor. And I've got to tell you, I am going to love doing it. It's going to be awesome. And I know many of you are sitting there. A lot of you don't know me. Get ready, because we are going to make great changes, and it's going to be fun. And get ready to make a difference. Thank you.
Mr. Williams, we'll stay with you. For 20 years, we have been debating the need for a long-range fiscal plan. We're a state that balances its budget on a declining commodity. What is your vision for a long-range fiscal plan, and how do we get there?
You know, I get concerned sometimes. I guess one of the themes I have, not just to listen and learn and lead, make sure we're learning from all Alaskans and make sure we're listening, but I would say also that we have to do our homework. We have to do our homework on issues. So I find it troubling that we've had a looking at our revenue structure, and you hear, or looking at gas lines, and you hear people say, well, it's really complicated. It's really complicated, and we have to do something. I hope it doesn't mean we have to do something stupid. You know, we need to do something smart. And it isn't just like, well, it's complex. We got to make sure we do our homework, and we got to make sure that it makes sense. And so I guess one of the things we need to do is we have to make sure that we have good information out there. And we do have declining revenue on the North Slope. We've known that in 1992. ARCO has a report out there basically said the decline is starting now. We know it's inevitable. If we want to increase our production, it's going to happen with heavy oil. It's going to happen with ANWR, the Outer Continental Shelf, or it's going to happen with shale. But trying to dream that we're going to change something and all of a sudden do something with Prudhoe Bay is disingenuous and doesn't make sense. So we have to do smart things. The other thing we can't do is think about, we can do anything in this state. We can spend $1 billion to build a bridge so I can get to Wasilla 7 minutes quicker, and there's no problem about that we're going to do that. But when we start talking about public education, all of a sudden we're broke and we have to cut things back. So we need to make sure we're talking in things that make sense, and we have to realize that an investment in public education is a responsibility. It's a burden. I'm a direct beneficiary of a quality public education. My dad dropped out in 10th grade and thought that was plenty. And I had great public teachers that supported me and encouraged me to go on. And if they hadn't, I've gotten a degree in petroleum engineering. I wouldn't have been in the Peace Corps. I wouldn't have been the Alaska 2009 Teacher of the Year. There is no bigger change for equity in this state for all Alaskans than a quality public education. And we all need to own that. Thank you.
Senator French, 2 minutes.
Fiscal policy.
Yes.
Thank you. The first thing you have to do is address the issue. You have to talk about it. I have here a copy of the governor's State of the State speech. It's his moment as the leader of the state to come before the legislature and the people and describe what the state of the state is. And the word budget deficit does not appear in this document, which to me was a shocking, shocking failure of leadership. Last year we had a budget surplus. This is the first year we've had a budget deficit in a long time. Andrew remembers those years. He served in the legislature those years. They're tough years. But that word does not appear in here. And it is, I'll say it again, a shocking failure of leadership. You have to address the issue. My own plan, first of all, repeal the giveaway, right? Fix your oil tax structure. Put a fair oil tax in place and make certain that, as we did from 2007 to 2013, you can put aside record amounts of savings when oil prices spike, as they inevitably do. Oil prices spike over time. You don't know where, you don't know when, but the oil industry knows they're going to do it, and we know they're going to do it because you look back over time and they spike. And when oil prices spike and the oil industry is printing money, God bless them for doing it. I still have a BP retirement waiting for me someday when I stop working. I'm for that. But the state has to benefit as well, and that's why the giveaway was so pernicious and so bad for the state's fortunes. It's because it erases that possibility of a windfall. Next thing you have to do is make your savings last as long as possible. This year we went through $6 billion of our $18 billion in savings. That's bad. And it's not going to last forever. And as you look forward, you want to make sure you have as soft a landing as possible. Someday Alaska is going to be like everywhere else. Chances are someday, there's some form of sales tax or some form of income tax that happens in Alaska. You want that to be as far off in the future as possible and as light as possible, because it's a shock to the economy. Finally, and I think Bob touched on this, make sure you prioritize your mega projects. Right now, this governor is pursuing 5 or 6 mega projects, and we're likely to wind up at the end of his next administration, if we don't change something, with five of them half built. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator French, we'll stay with you. Is state spending currently too high, too low, or is it just right? 2 minutes.
State spending is about right. If I were going to make cuts, I'd make cuts in the capital budget and try to save our savings as long as possible. You always have to keep downward pressure on state government. The idea that you can build a new legislative information office, which to me is an absolute travesty. It makes my heart bleed, and I'm actually proud of the fact that I will never go to work in that building. My term in the state Senate is over in January, and I'll never have to walk in there and be embarrassed by those surroundings. It hurts me to see a building that looks like a fancy hotel going up to house bureaucrats. I worked 12 years in that building. It was perfectly adequate. The seats were, the floors were level, the ceiling tiles weren't broken down, it worked just fine. I was just in Petersburg. I went to see the police station there, and that's a travesty. The floors are not level. The place is overcrowded. There's cardboard boxes spilling into the hallways. They've needed it fixed for 20 years, and it's just fallen behind. They need some help in Petersburg. You have to have a functioning police system, or else you're losing your ability to have a society. But in general, I think spending is about right. One area where we're failing to make the adequate amount of investments is in education. Okay? How do you compete in a global marketplace? You create the most intelligent workforce possible and turn them loose. With a powerful education system and broadband technology, any Alaskan in any corner of this far-flung state can compete with any person on the globe. That's how you create economic opportunity, and that's how you compete around the world. But as far as state spending goes, every year we examine the budget. We always look for savings. We always try to screw the number of people down, the positions down. But the idea that you're going to push 25% of state spending off the table is unrealistic. You know that from your years there. People love to campaign on that. It always sounds good out in the front of the public. But go to Juneau, examine the budget. We've had hard-headed budget people examining that budget for a long time, and it's tough to push it downward. Thank you.
Mr. Williams, 2 minutes.
It's not about whether the amount that we're doing, it's how well we're spending it. We have to make sure we invest in quality. And so if you look at this so-called education session, almost every single thing out there doesn't do a thing to improve the quality of the education system. So that's a waste. You look at the legislative offices, and you're when you take your costs, and all of a sudden they're going to be five times what they were, that's ridiculous. And you had a proposal to spend $1 million on furniture, and with a design theme for $100,000. I'm the son of a logger. We don't even need to use spruce. We can take cottonwood trees, and I can cut you chairs for everybody for free. So we just got to make sure we're using our money right, and we need to think about what is an adequate and reasonable amount for public education. And why don't we be like some of those conservative Republican states like Texas, like Indiana, that are putting about 30% of their state funding into public education. We're well below that. We have huge challenges. We have equity issues between rural Alaska and urban Alaska. We need to make sure that we've been cutting hundreds of positions. At the same time, we have all these other things. We also need to make sure that we have more transparency. We don't have transparency in our oil industry. It's a tax on profits, but we've had the cost per barrel almost double over the last few years. We don't really have a clear answer why. We need more information. We need transparency. We also have a very non-transparent capital budget process. Everybody pushes every dream in there. And one person said, well, we can't really change that because some people ask for the moon, some people ask for direct money for religious institutions, and so we can't really change that. Why not? What a great way to dial back out of control capital spending at times than putting some sunshine on that. And so we need a more transparency is, I'd say, one of the things that would put things in perspective. So it's not too much, too little. Invest in quality and invest for a bright future for all Alaskans.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, we'll stay with you. What is your position on ballot measure one that will be on the August 19th primary? That is the debate over oil tax reform in Senate Bill 21.
I am voting yes on ballot measure one. I have some of my supporters are voting no. If you look at the polling, it looks like the yes vote is slightly ahead. If you look at billboard signs and all the parades, it looks a little different, and particularly if you watch on TV. I think that everything has been done to make it so that ballot measure fails. I predicted that the legislative session would end after Easter, so it could move other ballot initiatives off, besides so that ballot initiative one would just be there by itself. And I predicted it would be done before the next weekend because Coghill had a wedding that weekend, and then it did fall within that time. So we've rigged it up so that measure will has a good chance of failing. If you look at spending, it's about 1,000 to 1 on one side than the other. And that undecided vote is not going to split evenly. But the thing I'm asking my supporters to do, if you're voting yes or no, I still want you to support Bob Williams for lieutenant governor. But the most important thing is we have to do our homework. We have to do our homework and make sure we learn and that we're making an informed vote on that. I'm shocked that BP, if you look at their website, one of the things they'll talk about is that, you know, look at Alaska. Our oil production is falling, and North Dakota has gone up 192%, and it's because of the SB. It's because of ACEs, and I don't know of anyone who's really informed on this that really believes that. I think everyone knows there's a shale play, and production increased in North Dakota because of shale. We have some shale possibilities; we haven't developed them, but to pretend that the production of Prudhoe Bay is declining because of ACEs, I think is ridiculous. So we need to make sure that we're making informed decisions, we're doing things that make sense, and everyone has to do their homework.
The moderator is going to utilize his discretion here.
Some quick disclosure here. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, that's the group that debate moderator Andrew Halcrow is the president of, has taken an official stance in favor of keeping the oil tax cuts passed under Senate Bill 21. In oil tax reform speak, the chamber is advising its members to vote no on Proposition 1.
I heard a lot of emotion in your response. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear a lot of economics. So what specifically about the SB 21 tax structure do you feel is not working for Alaska or not generating investment?
Oh, it's a $1 billion off of the rate that North Dakota is bringing in right now. And I do think when the price is high, ACEs takes too much. I think that needs to be adjusted. But SB 21 went way overboard. And so I'm kind of with Bert Stedman. You know, I think get Bert Stedman, Republican Senator Bert Stedman, get Joe Passman together, come up with something. But we need something in between. The worst thing we can do is have this vote August 19th and think that solves it. That's the end of it. We need adjustments. We need to make sure we have a great oil industry. We need to make sure it continues ongoing and that it's competitive. But SB 21 just gave way too much away.
So in a follow-up, so do you feel ACEs did not work, or do you feel that ACEs was working?
I feel ACEs was working, but it takes too much when the price is very high.
So therefore, it's not working.
It was working, but if the price gets very high, it needs to be adjusted. So it's a difference between tweaking and throwing things out.
Okay. Senator French, same question, 2 minutes.
Thank you. I've been working on this issue since 2004, when some of my House colleagues came to me and said "There's the tax system is broken." And I look forward to being back here in a couple of weeks, because I'll be presenting in a long presentation about this. But the tax system was broken in 2004. The second largest oil field in North America, Kuparuk, the place where I spent 8 years of my life, was paying less than 1% production tax. That's horrific. That's robbery. And Our friends in the oil industry, as much as I like them and I work with them and talk to them, they didn't come to us and say, hey, you know, you should look at your formula, because the second largest oil field in North America is paying less than 1% production tax. We had to figure that out for ourselves. That's your role as a state leader. And we began to try to change the oil tax structure, and it's nearly impossible in Juneau, until the 2006 VECO vote buying scandal shocked the Capitol, loosened the grip of the oil industry temporarily on our process. And in 2007, in a 30-day special session, when we focused on nothing but one subject, with the cameras running and the lights on and everything being done in committee, we crafted what I believe was a fair oil tax. And I'll defend it at length in a couple of weeks. But let me just give you one number as you think about this debate. And if I haven't been clear, I'm going to be voting yes. Voting yes on number one. $8 billion. $8 billion. That's approximately the difference between what we raised under ACEs while it was in effect from 2007 to 2013 and what SB 21 would have raised over the same time period. That's the difference. And that's from the Department of Revenue answering a question I posed to Senator Giesel in committee and the Resources Committee. They wrote a letter back and provided the answer. $8 billion, incidentally, is about what we spent on education over those years. So if you believe we should take our education budget and hand it over to the oil industry at a time when they were making record profits and investment was going up and jobs were going up, I would just say that's a bad idea. That's a bad bargain. And I would love to talk to you about this more, about some of the things about SB 21 that I think are broken, but I see my time is up. Thank you.
follow-up, Senator French. If investment was going up, if profits were going up, if employment was going up, why did production decline so dramatically?
I believe that's production began declining in 1989, Andrew, as you well know. I was working on the North Slope at the time, and the production throughput on the pipeline was 2 million barrels a day. Why did production decline at Kuparuk? When I come back, I'll put a big graph on the screen of Kuparuk, because under ELF, in 1996, the production tax at Kuparuk was 12%. In 2006, it was less than 1%. So over 10 years, that production tax declined steadily, just like that, in a steady and predictable fashion, okay? A mathematical formula that everybody knew that tax was gonna go down. Went below 6%, went below 4%, went below 2%. That was a 10-year real-time experiment on the theory you just propounded, that lowering taxes will somehow increase in production. So what happened? What's the answer, right? What's the answer? What happened to Kuparuk, second largest oil field in North America, after a 10-year real-time experiment in dropping taxes? Production declined 7% a year. You have to do more than just lower taxes. You have to tie that to investment in Alaskan fields. That's the real trick.
Follow up. I'll do a quick follow up. Under ACES, there was an attempt to attract small and medium independent operators. And ACES gave very, very generous exploration credits. The problem was when these small guys got up here and drilled holes in the ground, your production taxes were too high for them to monetize. And there were several people, including Armstrong Oil, during committee testimony, that testified that if you wanted to increase production, you had to lower the tax rate for the big three majors because they were the only ones to hold the leaseholds. So again, it gets back to my original question. If ACES worked, why did production decline and why has production now leveled off?
That's a question asking for about a half an hour response, but I'll try to shrink it down for you, okay? First of all, you have to remember that it's tying it to Alaskan investment. Simply lowering the tax on the elephant fields, Kuparuk, Alpine, Prudhoe, is a bad idea. Remember that Norway taxes more than Alaska does, did under ACES, right? And they've had strong investment and a fairly steady, they've had a production decline as well. That seems to be just a function of geophysics, right? You can squeeze more oil out of Prudhoe. What we're frankly doing is trying to manage the decline, to aim it as low as possible. And when I come back in 2 weeks, I'll have lots of data about what BP recommended as far as an investment on the North Slope to be healthy back in 2006 when we set oil taxes. And the fact is that we hit their targets. We got to the numbers they recommended to us as an ideal investment environment. And I hope I've answered that question well, but I see I'm a little out of time.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor Hollis French and Bob Williams. French and Williams discuss their visions for Alaska in a debate hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and recorded July 14th at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center. Other candidates for Lieutenant Governor include Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan, running as a Republican, and independent candidate Craig Fleener. Anchorage Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow moderated this debate.
Okay. And we'll stay with you, Senator French. Should Alaska legalize and regulate and tax marijuana?
There's two parts to that question. The short answer is I'm voting no on the marijuana ballot initiative. The longer answer is that it's probably time for us to stop putting people in jail for the recreational use of marijuana. That, I think, is a policy whose era is past. The ballot initiative, I think, goes too far. It legalizes not only marijuana, but the derivatives and the condensed products, and you wind up with storefronts, and I don't think Alaska's quite ready for that. But, frankly, we've had, since 1971 or two, the Rabin decision on the books that makes at-home personal use of marijuana legal, but it's always been in conflict, of course, with state law and with federal law, and it's a complicated legal situation. My own view is that I'm a former prosecutor, so as far as I'm concerned, bad people need to go to jail. But when you the more jails you build, the more it costs. And frankly, the jail revolution, the anti-prison revolution, is coming to us out of the great state of Texas, where they decided it was time to stop building so many prisons. because the more people you put in jail, the more it costs. The new Goose Creek prison cost $250 million to build. Okay, that's five brand new high schools. A brand new high school costs about $50 million. So we put five brand new high schools into a bunch of concrete out there, and we've filled it up full of prisoners, but you're gonna have to build another one in a few more years if you don't do something. And that's why we started looking at things like rehabilitation programs. The insight that they had in Texas, the speaker that they sent to us from Texas, was this, you know, right-wing Republican, but they just decided they couldn't spend any more in prisons. He said, you have to differentiate between the people that you're mad at and the people you're afraid of. Okay, and in my time as a prosecutor, I met plenty of people I was afraid of, you know, psychopaths, sociopaths. I went down and did a case that came out of Spring Creek, and we went down there and did interviews in Spring Creek, and there's some people down there who need to be behind bars for the rest of their lives. But people who are using small amounts of recreational drugs probably don't need to occupy a $50,000 a year prison cell. Thank you.
Mr. Williams, same question, 2 minutes.
Yeah, there's a woman in Juneau that was only allowed 25 plants, was caught with 55 plants, and could have served 5 years in prison, and she was given 1 year probation, and was kind of given a very light sentence. That's a woman in Juneau. What if it was a man from Mountain View that wasn't as remorseful and used a little profanity, and we ended up putting him in jail for 5 years? To me, that's not a good use of spending close to $300,000 to put someone in prison for something that's nonviolent. But I have lots of concerns. One thing that we're seeing two big pilot projects in Washington and Colorado. And one of them is for people who haven't used marijuana before, just one candy bar. They're saying it should be, you know, probably cut up into 16 pieces. How many of you take a candy bar and just eat 1/16th of it and then wait 1 hour, a couple hours for something to happen? And so we have to have things that make sense. Same thing with cookies. When I eat cookies, I'm usually eating 4 or 5. And not everyone's running home and putting them in lock boxes. And so I'm very concerned about it can't increase the youth rate. I'm very concerned. I'm a teacher of the year dedicated to making sure that I'm making everyone as smart as they can, that they have grit, and we can be successful. We have hard problems. We have challenging problems, and we can't be stoned or drunk. We've got to be sober, and we've got to be cognizant to do it. So I'm concerned about youth having their effect to get into the military. I'm concerned about an increase in the youth rate. But that idea of criminalizing and spending a lot of money to put people in prison for recreational drug use, I think is wrong. There's some changes, but I will be voting no.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, we'll stay with you. Do you support the minimum wage increase on the November ballot? 2 minutes.
I do. I think it's we have not increased it for a long time. I think if you look at the people trying to work and provide for their families, I've traveled to all across the state and through Anchorage and done door knocking, and there's just a lot of people that are working very, very hard. And it was interesting. I think one thing we need to do in this state is I'm a math teacher, so I'll just say, we need to increase the radius of our circle of empathy and compassion for others. I was at a Christian radio station, there was a woman there, and just before I went on the air, and she was like, she was against almost every, she was against Medicaid expansion, she was against the minimum wage, against all these things, and she had this sense that there's just a bunch of moochers out there. And that's just not the experience of what I've seen. We can't make all our decisions based on an anecdote. I think there's a lot of people working very hard, trying to get by, and the minimum wage has not increased for a long time, and it's time to increase it. And so I will be voting yes.
Thank you. Senator French, 2 minutes.
Likewise, I'll be voting yes to increase the minimum wage. Frankly, we probably could have gone 50 cents to a dollar higher. I think it's going to go up to $9.85. And I think if Ed Flanagan, who ran that ballot initiative, had a do-over again, he would have set the number a little higher. Because I think the new federal minimum wage under federal contracts is something like 10 plus, 10.50. So $9.85 is not an outrageous wage to pay someone for their labor. Moreover, keep in mind that two-thirds of any economy is driven by what? Consumer spending. Two-thirds of your economy is driven by consumer spending. That's true nationally. It's true here in Alaska. Consumers with money in their pockets go to stores, buy stuff. They rent apartments. My wife and I have, for 25 years, run an apartment rental business. but two minimum wage workers will barely make enough to rent an apartment here in Anchorage. The cost of housing is going sky high. And so we haven't kept up with inflation. We haven't kept up with sort of basic living conditions, not only to, you know, to increase the circle of empathy, but just to let someone make a living, let someone get through the day. So I think it's important to raise the minimum wage. And I have supported those bills in the legislature. They're hard to get through the legislature. And so I think the ballot initiative process is the way to go, and I'll be voting yes.
Very good. Now we'll switch to the candidate-to-candidate question portion of our program. We'll have two. Looking at the time, we're only going to have time for two candidate-to-candidate questions. Please pose a 30-second question, or question within 30 seconds to your opponent. Your opponent has 1 minute to answer. Senator French, we'll start with you. Your question for Mr. Williams, please.
Great. Bob, you were the Teacher of the Year, 2009. I think it would be good for this audience, and that's a fantastic accomplishment. I think this audience should hear from you about what it's like to try to work in a classroom under flat funding, to try to do business in a classroom when there's not enough resources coming for you to do your job, and what steps you have to take to convey to your students the all-important process of educating them.
Yeah, I would just say that I think that was one of the challenges. I always thought I'm just going to work in my classroom, do as everything I could, and I was going to make a difference for my students. And I've done that for more than 20 years. But I always assumed there was someone kind of smart over on the side making the best decisions for all Alaskans. And I've lost faith in that. Our current governor has pushed vouchers, which would basically transfer $100 million a year from public funds to non-public funds. And not improve public education in any way whatsoever. We've had teaching positions cut across the state. I used to have class loads at a high school of like 130 students. Now it's like 160, 170. There are teachers in my building trying to do their job with up to 200 students. It's a less personal education. It's exhausting, and it's affecting our ability to attract and retain teachers. I lost a great teacher this summer. I couldn't make the case for her to stay because there's more attractive opportunities elsewhere. We need to do better. We can do better.
Mr. Williams, your opportunity to ask Senator French a question.
Yeah, Hollis, in January, I mean, it was challenging. You tried to get some committee assignments changed, and you couldn't get that through. And then on SB 108, and I've always been a big believer in innocent to proven guilty, but that was a vote that went 18-1, and you were the only person opposed to it. So I guess one of my questions is, that need as Lieutenant Governor reach across the aisle and bring in support from the other side, how do you plan to do that as Lieutenant Governor?
Thank you. Yeah, I have lived, not only do I talk the talk, I have walked the walk. I spent 6 years in a coalition that began with me reaching out and shaking hands with Lyda Green. And I think anyone would tell you that she is a highly conservative person. We shook hands, formed a coalition, sat down, and did 6 years of good work, working across the aisle. I was in a coalition with people who were very conservative. We met every day in caucus. We did good things. In 2008, the legislature put $5 billion into savings, the single biggest deposit into savings in the history of the state. And that was because of the bipartisan across the aisle work. I'll be happy to talk to you more about the couple of examples you brought up, but in 6 years, we did some fantastic, I believe that 6 years will be looked on as the golden era in Alaskan politics, when it was win-win for the state and for the industry and for our savings accounts. Thank you.
Very good. Senator French, follow-up question for Mr. Williams, 30 seconds for your question.
Bob, I'll go back to education. You know, this was supposed to be the year of education. We were asking for $404 plus $125 for the next 2 years in inflation proofing. In my view, in the year of education, education came last. What we got was about a $300 increase to the BSA and then nothing. So for the next 2 years, we'll be flat funding, more cuts to classrooms, more cuts not only here in Anchorage, but in Juneau and in Fairbanks and around the state. As a classroom teacher, what happens when you go from 50 teachers at a high school down to, say, 45?
It just makes it more challenging. And I think one of the problems with public education is many times something will be pushed out as something that's efficient, and they say, oh, this is more efficient. We've got more students in the class. But if it changes the quality of public education, it's not worth it. And we've been doing that. We've had our legislative session. Every idea out there changed quality and made things worse. And so teachers are working as hard as they can. They care about students. They want to do a great job. And the legislature hasn't been there. The governor hasn't been there. And we see these things that just don't make sense, like vouchers. We're pushing things that don't make sense. Or the blanket push of charter schools. There's a great charter school in San Diego. 100% of their students are in poverty, and they get great results. The problem is, we just promote charter schools, but we don't look at quality. A lot of charter schools are pulling kids that have low rates of poverty, and we would expect good results. So we have to make sure we're doing things that make sense, and we have to look at poverty.
Mr. Williams, your final question for Senator French.
Hi, Alice.
Hey, Bob.
Good to see you. You know, there's that saying of always doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. You've run for governor, and you've lost. You told supporters you were going to run for governor this time, and told me that you knew you could win it, and you had your bumper sticker, and then you gave up on that. And I've talked to people across the state, very, very wishing that you were still in the Senate. And so I guess my question is, why should people trust you this time and give you your vote?
The reason I decided to run for lieutenant governor instead of governor was because of the enormous respect I have for Byron Mallott, the skill set that I think he brings to the office, and the fact that, in my belief, with the two of us running, we would be a powerful combination of a Southeast person and a South Central person. In my view, it was unnecessary for Democrats to have an expensive and destructive primary up until August 19th, when we faced a governor who didn't have a primary and a third-party candidate who didn't have a primary. In my view, that was destructive to Democrats. So I decided to do what I thought was the right thing and step back and run for lieutenant governor. And I know it's become awkward between the two of us, and I wish it could be different, but it's not. It's a tough business. I've run 7 campaigns in the last 14 years, and I've learned a lot about campaigning, and what you gotta do is make the best decision you can and then stick it out. So I'm not quite sure what your question ultimately drove at, but I can promise you that I'm going to be the strongest candidate possible. I've been traveling statewide. I've got a huge team of supporters, and I look forward to the general election.
And now we'll move on to our closing statements. Senator French went first, so Mr. Williams, we'll start with you. Closing statements, 2 minutes, please.
I'd like to thank Andrew Halcrow and the chamber. It's been great to be here. And thank you, Hollis French. My name is Bob Williams. I'm excited to be running for lieutenant governor. And I've only been focused on one position. I've looked at that role of lieutenant governor, and I realize it's had a low bar. But I saw that as a mechanism to make great changes in the state of Alaska. And the same way I've made changes as a teacher, the same way I've made changes as a worker, as a logger, I know that I can make changes in that office, lieutenant governor. And it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be awesome. But when I look out at all of you, you know, the truth is, if you're coming to dinner or to lunch at the Anchorage Chamber and you're paying $30 to get in, there's a very good chance I don't know you. And there's a very good chance I haven't met you, because my lunch is usually about one-third of that. But what I want to say is that I've been reaching out to small business owners. I have friends in the oil industry, and they're not with me on Proposition 1, but I want you to know I plan to listen and learn and lead from all Alaskans, including you. So I know there's some buttons on your table and some envelopes, and please grab them. Like my Facebook page, like my website. And if you don't plan to, leave them. I'll collect them up. I've got about 20 cents into each of them. I'm a very frugal person. And I know a lot of you, a lot of people, I live in Mattsu, people are very focused on that word, fiscally conservative. And when you're spending 5 times as much as you used to for a legislative office, that's a weird definition. So I see myself as fiscally pragmatic. I got a car that it was going to cost $2,000 to fix the front bumper. And I drilled a hole in it, put a zip tie on it, and called it good. And so if you think that I'm some sort of tax and spend Democrat that's going to be wild with your money, I'm not. I'm the son of a logger. My dad's top salary was $26,000 a year. I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to work as hard as I can to be your lieutenant governor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Senator French.
Thanks. Just a little bit more on the run for governor. This is the Bradner's Legislative Digest. It's been published in Alaska since 1971. This is their Alaska 2014 analysis. And just a few words on their analysis of how Byron and I go together. It says here that French will be an asset to Malat as a running mate. Malat has a good base in coastal Alaska among fishers and fishermen and in rural Alaska in general. Senator Hollis French will be his running mate and brings a solid base in Anchorage, perhaps enhanced by the 2012 elections when he had to run the gauntlet of an extremely well-financed attack campaign in a gerrymandered new district weighted against him. Surviving what he did in 2012 has to have broadened his public stature. He's a tough guy. He's a survivor. Those are nice words, and I appreciate those from the Bradners. But let me say this. We're all here today because we're concerned about the future of the state. The governor is leading the state in the wrong direction. If we don't repeal the giveaway, the state's savings accounts will soon be drained. We won't be able to make investments in energy, in infrastructure, and in education. We have to repeal the giveaway. We have to go back to the win-win era of 2007 to 2013. Record profits on the North Slope, record savings being banked in Juneau. Either way, though, we have to make critical investments in energy and in education. The best long-term investment you'll ever make is investing in your own people, period. And you have to bring down the long-term cost of energy across the state through investments in renewables. It's been my honor to serve 12 years in the state Senate. I've had the opportunity to work on many areas of public policy, resource development, health care, transportation issues, criminal justice matters. I look forward to being the next lieutenant governor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me thank the candidates for appearing here today. Please join us again next week where the second debate in our six-part debate series will be held on ballot measure 2 on the November ballot, the legalization of marijuana in Alaska. And with that, I want to thank everybody for attending today, especially the candidates. And on behalf of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, good luck in your race. And everybody else, have a fabulous week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor Hollis French and Bob Williams debated their visions for the state of Alaska. The primary election is scheduled for August 19th. Only one Democratic candidate will make it onto the November ballot. Other candidates for lieutenant governor include Republican Dan Sullivan and independent candidate Craig Fleener. For ongoing election coverage, visit our website at alaskapublic.org. Thank you for tuning in with us today. The debate you just heard was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and was recorded July 14th at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center. You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Beattie Trantina. Thank you for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.